Thank you, Blessing and Jonga. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Thursday, November 13th, 2014. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Sandra Nyaira.
And I'm Chris Gande.
Here are our top stories this evening.
A ZANU-PF Supreme Decision-Making Body, the Politburo, is currently meeting in Harare in yet another meeting that is expected to be explosive as factionalism continues to tear the Liberation Party apart.
Gweru residents are worried by the heavy presence of anti-riot police in the Midlands capital, saying it creates unnecessary tension in the community.
And striking doctors call off their action and agree to return to work tomorrow after the government agreed to a slight adjustment of their allowances.
Doctors are going back tomorrow, but they are going back tomorrow with a very heavy heart. But it's also they're going back tomorrow thinking that they will be able to be offered what the employer promised.
ZANU-PF's Supreme Decision-Making Body, the Politburo, is currently meeting in Harare in yet another meeting that is expected to be explosive as factionalism continues to tear the ruling party apart as it heads to a crucial December elective congress. The meeting is set to be dominated by debate on the current infighting within the ruling party, which is pitting two factions whose leaders are alleged to be Justice Minister Emmerson Mnangagwa and Vice President Joyce Mujuru, both said to be eyeing President Robert Mugabe's office when he retires. Mr. Mugabe is now 90 years old. And tensions have been and continue to run high in the party, especially following a move by the alleged Mnangagwa faction to unleash the First Lady onto the political scene and turning the heat on the Mujuru camp. The dismissal of provincial leaders is also expected to take center stage at the meeting, which is ongoing at the ZANU-PF headquarters. Meanwhile, Chris, we have a very important story from Gweru.
Anti-riot police have, for the second day running, maintained a heavy presence in the Gweru Central Business District, prompting some residents to voice concern that their presence is creating unnecessary tension, which has the potential to trigger violence. Correspondent Taura Ishava brings us more.
Although the anti-riot police were stationed in groups at various places in the central business district, they were mainly concentrated around the provincial headquarters of the Zimbabwe National Liberation War Veterans Association, located along Leopold Takawira Avenue in the nearby commuter omnibus terminus at the corner of Leopold Takawira and 6th Street. Some locals who spoke to Studio 7 said, although it is important for the police to keep peace among other duties, such a heavy presence is intimidating and creates unwanted tension. One resident, Timothy Mpofu, said it is frightening to members of the public to have so many anti-riot police on the streets without being informed about what security threat there is.
In our normally daily lives, we don't get to know about the police roaming around, especially during ordinary, normal working hours, except in the evenings, yes, here and there. But again, you do not see a riot police. For me, riot police, they're just as good as meeting armed personnel. This is just, it makes people very apprehensive. It's really unnerving.
Another resident who only identified herself as Tinae echoed similar sentiments, saying such a presence of anti-riot police reminds her of a war situation.
As I was taking my kids to school yesterday, I was surprised to notice a lot of anti-riot police on the streets. Some people were quick to dismiss any fears, saying the demonstrations were over just on Machaya. But it was a very scary situation. Even my daughter asked me some questions. She thought the heavily armed police were soldiers, and she asked if there was going to be a war.
Sources say the presence of the anti-riot police was in anticipation of an intended demonstration by some war veterans and some ZANU-PF supporters in protest over the recent alleged ouster of the party's provincial chairperson Jason Machaya by members supporting one of the factions fighting for political turf in ZANU-PF. Studio 7 was not able to hear from the police or from provincial war veterans chairperson Terry Shumba. But Cornelius Mpereri, the ZANU-PF Provincial Information and Publicity Secretary, refuted the claims that some members of the party wanted to stage demonstrations, saying there was no such plan. Development Studies lecturer Didmas Dewa, with the Zimbabwe Open University, speaking as an independent analyst, told Studio 7 that he agrees with views that the factional fights in ZANU-PF could erupt into widespread violence. Dewa said although it is proper for the police and armed forces to be on alert all the time, they should not do anything that could create unnecessary tension or instill fear in members of the public. While agreeing that ZANU-PF squabbles could have wider consequences, Brian Dube, the national spokesperson of the MDCT's youth wing, said the police must not be used like an appendage of the ZANU-PF party.
It's a very disappointing development, especially the fact that the ZRP is used to police ZANU-PF events and incidences where there are disputes in ZANU-PF and they are wasting our resources trying to manage or police ZANU-PF. But at the same time, it may be made very clear that from the MDC side, we also believe that this is an indirect way of trying to intimidate us, pending our programs to come by trying to show us how many weapons they have and how many tear gas they have. But what I want to assure you is the revolution of the people is not going back. The movement of the people is not going back.
Meanwhile, the ZANU-PF Midlands Women's League yesterday re-elected 5 members to be part of the women's quota in the party's central committee. The 5 include Auxilia Mnangagwa, the wife of Justice Minister Emmerson Mnangagwa, and Tsitsi Mzenda, daughter of the late Vice President Simon Mzenda. Sources tell Studio 7 that although the election went without incident, there was also a heavy police presence at the ZANU-PF Convention and Conference Center just outside Gweru. Reporting for Studio 7 from Gweru, this is Taurai Shava.
Meanwhile, as the ZANU-PF internal upheavals continue, the Zimbabwe National Liberation War Veterans Association is set to throw some more spanners into the works this weekend when it holds what it says is an extraordinary elective congress in Mashingo on Saturday and Sunday. The congress has been called by members who are calling for the ouster of Jabulani Sibanda, their current leader, who is now at odds with President Robert Mugabe after he expressed his displeasure at the First Lady's utterances against Vice President Joyce Mujuru. War veterans who are known for backing ZANU-PF are now appearing to support 2 rival factions, allegedly led by Mrs. Mujuru and the other one led by Mr. Mnangagwa.
Joseph Chinotimba, who in the past tried to wrest power from Sibanda and lost, is leading the splinter group calling for Sibanda's ouster, backed by a previously unknown group calling itself the Elders of the War Veterans. War veteran Maxim Kandla tells Studio 7's Jonga Kandemiri that the weekend congress is not backed by the general populace of the war veterans.
Look, because the clear war veterans will not interfere with the operations of ZANU-PF as a political party or any other political party in the country. Therefore, they are not responsible to hire and fire anybody from a certain political party, because that political party, it has got its own channels. Rugare Gumbo, if he has wronged that party, he is there to stand corrected by, you know, being invited to a hearing or disciplinary committee. I'm sure it will be headed by the senior minister or someone. They are the ones who should actually fire Rugare Gumbo. After deliberations, after Gumbo, he has actually shared his side of the story.
What is causing all these divisions and problems within the War Veterans Association?
The reason behind this is that last time when Chenjerai Wounds was national chairperson, the same group interfered with his leadership. And then when Andrew took over, they actually interfered. Now it's Jabulani Sibanda, they just interfere. Then they've been saying Jabulani Sibanda is not doing anything in the form of the welfare of the war veterans. Yet Jabulani Sibanda is not a donor of war veterans. They know very well, it's very clear. The only person who was actually placed in sanctions right through the country is Jabulani Sibanda as a war veteran.
That was Max Mkandla, a war veteran. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Bulawayo.
Striking doctors today called off their industrial action and agreed to return to work tomorrow after the government agreed to a slight adjustment of their allowances. The Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association says its members met at Parirenyatwa Hospital today and resolved to resume their duties full scale while negotiations continue. Doctors Association spokesperson Francis Rwodzi tells reporter Ntungameli Nkomo their decision is motivated more by the plight of patients than the government's offer, which he describes as meager.
It is not what the doctors wanted. It's actually far off from what the doctors wanted. But we've managed to wear a humanitarian face. We've managed to come to a situation where we could save. Of course, we have issues with our employer. But I think we have other viable options where we could negotiate, particularly the bipartite negotiating forum. So doctors are going back tomorrow. But they are going back tomorrow with a very heavy heart. But also they're going back tomorrow thinking that they will be able to be offered what the employer promised. And what the employer promised that with effect from the 1st of January, they are going to affect the things that we negotiated in the meeting that we held with them. So this is the situation that we have. Doctors will be going back tomorrow. It's a very huge compromise, but hoping that the employer will be able to live up to the things that they promised to offer to the doctors.
How much damage would you say was caused by this strike? Any statistics as to how many people died who ordinarily should not have died?
That's a very good question. In fact, as the Zimbabwe Hospital Doctors Association, we are not able to tell you how many people were casualties of this strike in terms of deaths and so, because our members were not going to work. So that really there's no way we're going to tell how many people died. I mean, and if you want to get that information, for example, at Parirenyatwa, you can call the chief executive officer who will give you that information. But I can tell you that from the interactions that we have had with other health institutions, for example, the Red Cross, that used to attend to between 300 to 400 patients a day. They are now attend to more than 1,000 patients.
A Doctors Association spokesperson Francis Rodzi on the line from Harare with Ntungameli Nkomo.
The Harare City Council has issued a statement informing residents of building on illegal sites to stop construction immediately to avoid the further loss of resources. In the statement released by the town clerk's office, the city fathers say demolitions on illegal construction sites will be conducted without notice. The stoppage, the statement reads, is to allow council, together with the Provincial Joint Operations Commission, JOC, which comprises the Zimbabwe Republic Police, the Army, the Zimbabwe Prison Service and the President's Office, to carry out an audit of all construction work on land that was not allocated to beneficiaries by the local authority and the Minister of Local Government, Public Works and National Housing. The audit begins immediately and its results will be openly communicated, the statement says. After the audit, council will regularize some properties, while those on condemned land will be asked to voluntarily remove their structures, failure of which the council will do it on their behalf at cost to the owners.
Any structures built above water, sewer and communication lines and under electricity pylons or on wetlands, school sites, near water reservoirs, road reserves and on sites reserved public amenities will be removed if the owners fail to voluntarily do so. A council is advising anyone who is not sure of the legality of their allocation to verify with the local authority to avoid further loss of resources and undue delays in finishing their construction work, the statement continues. Investigations will also be carried out to establish how the land was sold or parcelled out to the various beneficiaries outside the dictates of the council and the local government ministry. The statement threatens all those involved in illicit land deals that they will be brought to book. The council is also encouraging whistleblowing on the illegal land sales and provide names of those involved. The exercise is part of the wider measures by the local authority to restore sanity, beauty and aesthetics of Harare, reads the statement.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930 and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Let's take a look at regional and international news.
Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf is ending the state of emergency she instituted because of the Ebola crisis. In a speech today, Ms. Sirleaf said the fight against Ebola is not over and that some restrictions will remain in place.
Police in central India have arrested a doctor who performed sterilization procedures at a government-run health camp that left at least 13 women dead.
And U.S. President Barack Obama says he's confident of a new day in Myanmar, but says there is work yet to be done to reform the Southeast Asian country. President Obama made his comments today during a meeting with top leaders, including President Thein Sein and longtime democracy activist Yang Xiong Suu Kyi.
Zimbabwe's economy has been in free fall for a while now, with companies closing down, throwing more people onto the streets to join the thousands who are jobless. And as the economy continues to wane, ordinary Zimbabweans say they are continuing to directly bear the brunt. A report recently released by the International Monetary Fund found out that the economic situation in Zimbabwe remains difficult. The IMF said Zimbabwe's economy has not shown signs of recovery under adverse weather, low exports, and election year uncertainty that shattered growth prospects. For perspective on how ordinary Zimbabweans are managing, reporter Tatenda Gumbo spoke with a Jombe resident who chose to be called by a first name, Tafadzwa, and Mrs. Manjoro, a Bulawayo resident. Mrs. Manjoro says life is getting tougher for her and her family as the economy continues to decline.
There is no movement in terms of salaries. The things we used to get are now lesser than the ones they were before. Because right now, there is nothing that you can say I budget for this. Fine, the prices are still almost the same as they were before, although in some instances, some of the commodities, the prices have gone down. But still, that doesn't make our salaries, because the salaries that we have are just for the payment of rental and a few basic commodities. There is no spending in terms of luxury. You can't even think of going on a holiday, or even spoiling yourself by taking your family to a hotel for a dinner, lunch, that kind of thing.
Mr. Tafadzwa, what's your view? How are you faring as someone living in Zimbabwe right now in the current economic situation?
The problem, the only problem we are experiencing is unemployment rate. Only that. We'd be selling, we'd just a little bit of making ourselves business, selling things, like spending, at the end of the day, you find no one will be able to buy our goods, and because people have no money.
What are some of the things that you are selling, and are people buying them?
First, we try to sell some hardware, but at the end of the day, everyone is crying. No money, no money, no money. It's too hard nowadays. People have no money.
Amai Manjora, I'll come back to you. You spoke earlier about the issue of even having issues to find monies and all you're able to pay rent and rates. How hard is it to even get the money to even pay for those things?
Right now, it's a question of depending on the little that you get from your salary. Because we can't say you can pay your rent on the first day or the last day of the month for the next coming month, because the coming of the salaries is not predictable. So when you get the salary, you have to make sure that you have something that is, if there is anything to spare. If there is nothing to spare, you have to scout around. And it inconveniences people. You can see that the life really is not as it was, because everyone is just struggling to make ends meet.
Mr. Tafadzwa, same for you.
Becoming very impossible for me, as Ms. Manjore said, because from the people whom we rely to buy our goods, they are not getting their salaries. Some of them do not get them in time, so we are not getting anything. Becoming too tough for us to get money. We are just experiencing the same situation, and at the end of the day, everything is becoming harder. They are getting tougher and tougher. It is different from those days when we used to be in the unit government. Things were better. There was good circulation of cash. You could sell your things and get something. But nowadays, it's hard to get cash.
Amai Manjora, I'll come back to you here. What is your hope as you look at the future?
To be very honest, what we need in Zimbabwe is a government which is people-oriented. As long as we have people who are self-centered, who only think of themselves as the people who deserve to have a better life, then it means everyone's life will be doomed.
And Mr. Tafadzwa, same to you. What is your hope as you look to the future when it comes to the economy of Zimbabwe?
My suggestion, I only need employment for someone like an educated person like me. I think if they have investors opening companies, then we get employed. I think that's a better way of getting out of this problem.
That was Bulawayo resident Mrs. Manjoro and Jombe resident, who chose to be called by his first name, Tafadzwa, speaking to Studio 7.
Young Zimbabwean businessman Samo Dimairo has been in the United States for a month on an exchange program, learning the American way of doing business, learning international markets and related issues. Dimairo was one of the six Zimbabweans who were in the U.S. for a professional fellowship program organized by the State Department. He says he cannot wait to get back home to share with other business people, young as he is, the new and enriching information and knowledge he got while on the program in the United States. Dimairo is the co-founder of Chengete Zai Depository. He spoke with Marvelous Mtlanganyawe.
I was in North Carolina, Charlotte, alongside three other Zimbabweans and three Zambians. And we had another group of three Zimbabweans and three Zambians in Denver, Colorado. What has been really great is understanding the work culture, how businesses operate here, how government and private sector work together for national development, and how projects are executed with the long term in mind. You know, you hear people doing things that will have an effect maybe 10, 15, 20 years from now, and they're always striving to do better and better and saying the current situation we have is not good. And I think it's really a great culture that helps American businesses not rest on their laurels. And it's also been a great networking experience with various captains of industry that, you know, you would not ordinarily get exposed to if you tried, you know, maybe cold calling or trying to engage various companies, because you got to meet vice presidents and senior vice presidents of large multinational companies like Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Duke Energy, and, you know, also meeting, you know, some congressmen. And, you know, I got opportunity to meet a former Speaker of House as well. It was really good to understand their perspective of how, you know, they do business.
What is your takeaway, especially for the youth in Zimbabwe, that you are hoping will impact their future?
The key thing is to always have the long-term perspective in mind whenever you're doing anything. You know, if you work at it long enough, you eventually get there. And, you know, economic recessions are temporary. And, you know, when we look at the problems in Zimbabwe, you know, they're actually opportunities, and your opportunities lie in solving your problems. So I think they shouldn't lose hope. You know, those that come out of college and university, they've got degrees, they can't find jobs. Maybe they need to think about becoming an entrepreneur and creating their own jobs, basically looking at what we need in the future and starting to work on it today.
That was a businessman Samuel Dimairo speaking with Studio 7's Marvelous Ntlanganya. We are here in Washington.
Farmers in Zimbabwe's Matabeleland and North region say their livestock are failing to gain normal weight from available grazing land due to lack of dipping facilities and material, which are crucial in the deworming of domestic animals like cattle. Some of the farmers who spoke to Studio 7 say their animals are getting infected by diseases being passed on to them by wild animals moving in and out of the Wange National Park. This comes at a time when the government's livestock production department has called on farmers to dip their livestock at least once a week during the rainy season to protect them from tick-borne diseases such as heartwater. Deputy Agriculture Minister Paddy Janda tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that farmers should sell at least a beast to raise money for buying medicine for deworming animals.
Sometimes there's a shortage of chemicals, dipping chemicals, admittedly. But, you know, coming from where we are coming from, really, you know, you need to dip your cattle on a weekly basis. It was on a bi-weekly or on a monthly basis. But now, because of the onset of the rains, we get the rains on the onset, new grass germinating, obviously there's need to revert back to dipping on a weekly basis. But having said that, it does not constitute that then the members can claim that they have to destock their animals because there's no dipping chemicals. Why not sell one animal and then provide yourself with the necessary chemicals? I think we also need to win people's minds from relying on government everything for free when they're in a commercial venture of cattle farming.
Talking about Zimbabwe's attempt to restock its national herd, how far has the country gone, Honorable Janda?
Restocking is not like going to find animals somewhere and start just restocking. You know, no, we have 5.3 million animals here. I mean, that's our calving rate is at 45%. What I'm concentrating, or government concentrating on now, is to improve the efficiencies of the calving rate.
And that was Deputy Agriculture Minister Paddy Janda speaking with Studio 7 from Harare.
Following the cancellation of the November 2014 Ordinary Level English Language and Mathematics papers after a leak in the Midlands province, the Ministry of Education says all examinations will now be under the custody of the Zimbabwe School Examination Council, ZIMSEC, officials and not school headmasters to avoid future examination leaks. ZIMSEC yesterday said the new examination dates for rewriting the affected examinations to November 23 and to November 27, a move which has cost the government $1 million. Zimbabwe Teachers Association Chief Executive Officer Sifiso Ndlovu says the Ministry of Education should have engaged all stakeholders to come up with a more effective method of handling examination papers in the future.
ZIMSEC has always been desirous to stand on its own and therefore manage its affairs. But all along, it has been using educators and refusing to award them salaries or allowances for managing extra work, which the examining authority should have done in the past. And now they are making this decision and moving away at a time when they believe there is a gross mismanagement. This is an unfortunate development at a time when we've been saying we don't have sufficient resources to manage the examination system, let alone to equip the schools with necessary examination storage equipment, as it were.
What exactly, then, do you think would have been a more foolproof method to tackle this problem?
As my thinking was that ZIMSEC should have put in resources for equipping schools with those examination materials. It is not only the personnel that counts, but it is also the equipment, the storage, the transportation of those examinations that we should get care for.
That was Sifiso Ndlovu, Chief Executive Officer of the Zimbabwe Teachers Association, speaking from Harare with Stanikile Mhlanga.
Now to recap today's top stories.
ZANU-PF's Supreme Decision-Making Body, the Politburo, is currently meeting in Harare in yet another meeting that is expected to be explosive as factionalism continues to tear the Liberation Party apart.
And striking doctors call off their action.
That's all we have for you tonight. This is Sandra Nyaira in Washington, leaving you with Standekile and Ntungamili with the Ndebele Bulletin. But stay tuned for Live Talk with Plaxidus and Marvelous Women's Roundtable.